This is what it's like to be in bed with Big Pharma.
Get off of me. You're too big. I can't breathe. You're smothering me.
This has been What It's Like to Be in Bed with Big Pharma.
What's up, everybody? This is the SMO Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a party cast lined up, and I mean we have a party cast lined up. There's a lot of fucking people here today. Carnage, you're here. Tim, you're here. Chris Taylor, you're here. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. Brooke Poole, you're here. I think I covered everyone.
Nosferatu, you're here.
How's it going, everyone?
How's everyone doing?
Not bad. Oh,
everyone, yeah. Talk at the same time. Go.
That's a spicy question.
it's been a bit, but I can definitely say, despite anything else, I am surprisingly grateful for games to play. They keep everything moving at a pace.
Why? Also, what happened?
Like, helping people move furniture. Nothing's happened. Just my head's gone to a weird place, so I kind of just shut it down. But when you do that, you still have to keep functioning and moving and doing things. So, yeah. Like, for example, I helped somebody move on Saturday, and Sunday I saw the Eternals, and I played a lot of video games. And aside from that, I socially shut down. So it's been good, surprisingly good.
Moving is no joke, says the guy who has moved pianos for 3 years.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how the fuck you did that. Like, did you have to lift the piano with your arms rising, like in front of you, rising upwards? Not like the normal, like squat and lift with your back and your knees. I mean, like just doing like a bicep curl, but lifting the piano.
And like, it's always like squat and lift. I mean, you have to. It'll break your back otherwise.
Yeah, I can't imagine holding a piano like upright.
Yeah, there's ways to do it. You know, upright pianos can tilt. Grand pianos can go on their sides and legs taken off. You know, things like that.
That's a workout right there.
Yeah. But I offset it by eating like 5,000 calories a day, like, you know, gas station junk food.
I too eat 5,000 calories a day.
Like Chris like takes his shirt off on a whim because it's hot outside. He's like, damn, all these biceps. He's got a six pack over there. Yeah, you know, moving them Steinways. Shit.
Except the six pack is of Cokes.
Speaking of soda, Pernell, I've been waiting just for tonight for something.
Oh, that's what you said. You had a specific one of those newer sodas to try out on the show.
I have a very special new soda. I won a contest on Twitter.
Oh my god!
For a can of Cracker Jack Pepsi.
I gotta be honest though. As weird as it sounds, it makes reasonable sense because what is Cracker Jack? It's peanuts, caramel, and popcorn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I could easily see caramel Pepsi. That's a done deal.
I mean,
that's
they've had caramel Pepsi, and it was delicious.
Oh, I forgot. I didn't even remember that, but there it is. So there's caramel. Popcorn, I've had popcorn jelly beans. I mean, I can see that being just fine for that, too, in the same capacity. And then that just leaves the peanuts. Assuming they even bothered to include the peanuts, they could have just focused on the caramel popcorn. And
it definitely smells like peanut. I get a peanut whiff out of it.
Now, be careful, Joe. Well, you don't accidentally drink the toy inside.
No, please drink the toy. Drink the toy.
I guess now, Joe will be the guinea pig.
There's a sticker on the side of the can that you could peel off. I think I'm going to leave the sticker on there because chances are there might be someone who wants to buy an empty can off me. This is weird. It tastes very weird. You get the hint of caramel. The popcorn is pretty. The peanut is what throws it off. It is so weird drinking peanut.
I'm glad you enunciated that word correctly.
Yes.
Could have had a problem there.
I'm glad you said it first.
It's like, crazy drinking pee. Nuts.
Oh, no. We were thinking much worse than that, right?
Penis.
You guys know the SML podcast already.
Caramelized penis? Ground peanut penis. There you go.
Ground yes. penis.
Say that 10 times fast.
Penis, caramelized ground penis, penis, caramelized ground penis, caramelized ground penis.
I knew Brunel was going to immediately just start doing it. I knew he was going to do it.
I have to.
Doesn't disappoint.
So, Tim, how was your week?
I don't remember.
It was
fine.
It was a blur.
Yeah. Whenever anybody asks me that, I'm like, I don't fucking know.
I'm not
wasn't
lie.
That much different than the week
Should
before.
Happen, you know,
yeah. I can get that. I can relate to that though. Like, I'm not sure if it's my age or if it's just like the time stream, you know, compressing on itself because I'm getting older. But sometimes I have trouble remembering what I did like 3 days ago when I have to have like a trigger effect to pull it up. Like, oh shit, that's what I did. That's where that back pain came from.
Oh. Yeah, it's like we remember all these weird things about video games, like, oh, the secret level here and this thing and this weird, like, very minor detail. But, hey, I forgot what I had for breakfast last night or last night. Yeah, that's starting off great. I eat breakfast at night, guys.
Think about that, though. I thought that was interesting, too. Like, that's an interesting point you made. So we remember all those, like, secrets and games and the like. But right. if you really lay it down on the table, most of the secrets for games we remember stem back to games we played when we were younger. Like, exactly. The games we play as we're adults, we pick up the secrets, do the trick, and then forget it in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're too old for that shit now. We don't remember new stuff.
007-373-5963, baby.
Punch out.
If you got it. As an adult, you wouldn't remember that shit. Because nice. it's not your formative years. It's something about that period of history in your life. That things are just easy to remember. It's crazy. The brain's awesome and also terrifyingly defunct. I don't know.
Like the number to the Nintendo Power Hotline when you got stuck and there was no game.
1-800-255-3700.
Yeah, right. 867-5309.
Oh, she gave tips too?
Jenny,
so different types of tips, but you know, yeah.
Like I gave her a tip.
Jenny did this. That's right. That's also Jenny. 1-800-9-4-Jenny.
Oh, wow.
I can't forget about Jenny Craig either.
I got a lot of jiggles. At Empire, though Joe would know that one. 588-2300 Empire.
Today.
All these jiggles.
All the numbers.
877 cash now.
I mean, I got
877 cash now. So
I'm gonna call this episode numbers or something.
And of course, 1-800 collect.
Oh my god!
Shit.
Collect.
I remember 1-800 CALLATT because of Mr. T.
Don't call ATT.
As soon as you started saying 1-800, my brain filled it out with Cars for Kids.
Oh, no. I'd rather listen to any other song. Please.
Remember when the world needed multiple competing collect call services?
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah.
What a time to be alive that was.
And which one did WCW support? Were they 1-800-COLLECT?
I thought
supported one? Like,
well, directly? they were directly heavily sponsored by, so... Yeah.
Nice.
I think it was Slam of the Week by 1-800-COLLECT.
God, those men at the top look normal.
1-800-SML.
Oh my God.
1-800-SML. What do you get? You get like a porn channel or something.
That's not enough numbers to make a call. So.
Yeah.
Just fill it in with zeros or something. That's the gimmick.
Right. 1-800-SML-FART, and we'll see what that calls.
SML Sharp.
Oh, SML podcast is enough letters for a phone number.
There you go, Joe.
You'll get a special message from one of the SML reviewers when you call.
Hi, my name's Joe. You called our hotline. How are you?
Here are different flavors of Mountain Dew you've never tried
before.
Thank you
for calling.
Apple, Twisted Apple. Code Red. Cracker Jack.
I just had a thrashed apple earlier.
There you go. Like that would be.
Purnell, did you find it yet?
I have not. So if you come across it and you're like, hey, here's coming to you, but I think you had to have somebody send it to you too. So you're no better.
Yeah,
you're no better than I am.
Thank you for calling the Joe Hotline. Red Hot Smoking Joes are ready for you. That's the 1-900
SML.
Oh damn. Would you like
to? Are you alone?
Joe, get get Norg on the phone.
Hey, he's yeah. already working on a 5-hour foot long. So.
Oh, okay. Man. Nice. Yeah. So now that we're all hungry and thirsty, right? Thanks, yeah. guys.
Yeah. Now that Chris had to think up of grinding up a sub and putting it into a bottle, George is busy working on a commercial for that.
Yes,
he said he's doing it. All he needs is the music and the jingle, and he's ready to go.
My dreams come true.
I can just get on the phone and record myself going, bop, 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 and there it is. There's your jingle. Just loop that.
Yeah. With a big fuck yeah at the end, right? Fucking yeah.
Fucking yeah.
Fucking yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Oh, Lord. Right.
I'm ready for my close-up.
Oh, Joe's ready to segue.
No,
I can hear it in his voice.
Minor segue, but I was going to say, Brooke, you're back. What made you want to come back this week?
Well, way to put me on the spot. Just here for the laughs. Just here for a good time with the boys.
Oh, man. That plan is backfiring horribly for you.
You know, I will say I could really go for a juicy Omaha steak right about now. I can't really say why, but the craving hits, man. Only the best.
Christ, now I do want a friggin' Omaha steak. Damn it.
Right?
Cool it all.
Brooke is working on that endorsement.
I've been thinking about it.
Hey, the email could come. Joel, just get this random email. It's like, we've been listening to your podcast and thought it would be quite corking if we sponsored your show.
I can see her over there rubbing her hands together, eyes turned into dollar signs.
Ka-ching.
Like, we don't pay in money. We pay in steaks, which honestly would still be money. That would just
you get a steak and melt. And you get a steak in the company.
Oh, my God. Okay, that was awesome.
Oh, wait. I'm the one with the bad puns, but you beat me to one? Okay.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, that was...
It was a low steak attempt.
Oh, cripes, when the stakes are up. Whatever. I got nothing. I you guys already took all the good ones. I'm just going to say I like steak.
Right? That's cool.
Steaks are hoary.
You weren't fast enough you're to right. state it your must, claim.
Yeah, it must be a prime time to switch topics.
Yeah. It's better.
You guys are just ribbing me at this point, aren't you?
The stakes and move out of town.
They're going to have a pun
off. I did this to us. I think this is all me.
You got a problem with puns, Joe? What's your beef?
Oh, hang up with Carnage. Click, there we go.
I mean, it's rare that we have this many that are so well done.
Wow. Damn it.
Okay, now really, we got to get to the meat of this episode. So
that was a good, finale.
That was a good one.
Yeah, so reviews, y'all ready?
Yes.
Yep.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Riders Republic, developed by Ubisoft Annecy, published by Ubisoft, released October 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Jump into the Riders Republic massive multiplayer playground, grab your bike, ski, snowboard, or wingsuit, and explore an open-world sports paradise where the rules are yours to make or break. Pernell and Carnage, you're both going to talk about this. Pernell, how about you start? Tell us, what is Riders Republic?
Okay, so I need to lead this off with a very specific thing, which is that I was definitely interested in this game, but as anyone who listens to the show knows, I'm generally not the guy that's like, oh, here's one of those massive online DLEs with the whatever.
Same. But
having access to it for free to give it a shot, I was like, you damn right I'll give this a go. So... giving this a boot up, Mom, my first thing to realize was that it's kind of cool to see Ubisoft put the engine they built up over the years of work with the Far Cry franchise to use on something that isn't fucking Far Cry, being this game, because this is clearly inspired by the work they've done from that game with the same engine. And it's beautiful. Like, it's fantastic to explore and ride around on. But then the most important aspect to follow that with is, holy shit, this game is fantastic. Like, it's pretty much the kind of game where if they played their cards right, I really can't fathom needing another extreme sports game. Like, if you were to think about, I think a good way to put this would be if you took, maybe not the X Games. I say yes. If you took the X Games, but made it so that every race was only one vehicle instead of like all the vehicles at once, upped it to like current day standards and put some freaking speed on it. Then also took what I loved about Pilot Wing 64 when you unlock the free roam mode, but expand it immensely. And then instead of having a jumble hopper, you have actual ground vehicles and then the wingsuit for flying around. You'd get this game. And
wait, I said, no jumble hopper.
Hey, that's a beautiful thing about it. You know what? I said that originally. I was like, I'm going to write this. I want to talk about this game. And I'm going to mention the lack of a jumble hopper. But then immediately followed by saying, due to how this is designed, I can't fathom. They could totally be like, you know what? Here's a new vehicle. We're going to add some hopping thing to this. And now you can just hop around the map. And they could do that. And it would be fucking awesome.
A rocket-powered pogo stick.
Yes. Like, these are things they could totally do.
It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for this game, given some of the relics and hidden hidden equipment you could find in this game.
Like, I honestly feel like the only things I'm, as far as vehicles, and I'll talk about the game proper, that I would want them to add at this point would be, like, some sort of water vehicles, because that's like the one thing they're lacking is like water sports stuff and wacky vehicles, like wacky sports. So like, again, like a pogo stick racer, like a jumble hopper sort of
unicycle maybe. They have a couple.
Oh my god, 64 person unicycle race. Jesus.
Yes.
Everybody
it would be
falling.
Amazing. It would be so great. Just do it. They don't even have to use the crazy terrain. If they want to do like the balancing aspect of it, just use the highway elements and like ride down this highway on a U circle. Keep your balance while you're speaking up. And
good luck, fuckers.
It's great. Exactly. So like, what the hell is Riders Republic exactly? So the game starts out in a pretty much immediately saying, here's a fun race. Get to having some fun. And they're like, hey, so they introduced to a few of the vehicles, like the bike racing, going downhill, skis. And it's just like the wingsuit mechanics. And then after that is over, they kind of introduce you to like the, I guess, one of the, I call the two mascot characters of the game. And I guess they make me feel both really old and also really stupid at the exact same time. And I ain't gonna lie, I kind of mean that in a good way, because they totally fit the whole we're extreme motif. But if you're not a fan of that, don't sweat it, because they're not around for too long. They're mainly there to show you this is what Riders Republic is. And here's like, you know, the ropes of like getting introduced to the world that you're playing in. So like kind of show you how to progress through the game, which in the case of this, it's by performing in events and earning stars, which will increase your rank. And increasing your rank gives you a few things. One, you'll earn experience points. Well, I'll take it back. The ranking is just to get new events and the like, but the experience points you gain from the events will also upgrade your level, which will give you new equipment, which gives you better stats and events and stuff like that. But they pretty much show you those things. And then once you've learned the ropes of that, and also the ropes of the main Riders Republic hub, which is where like all the mass races and like equipment, you know, accessory purchases take place, they kind of just say, all right, have fun, do whatever the hell you want. And that's freaking amazing, because to give you a little side feedback here, from the moment the show started, I started at Riders Republic, the main hub, which is at the center of the map, pretty much. I got on a bike and started riding south to see how far I would get, just willy-nilly riding before it was time to review the game. I got maybe halfway between the center of the map and the southern border, and I still had so much more to go. There's tons to explore.
There's so much content. Yeah,
there really is. And one thing to note, because I immediately was like, you know, what are they going to shake out of me? Where's the in-game currency versus the purchasable currency? And honestly, from what I can tell, it's all accessory based. Like you can buy accessories in game with your earned income. And of course, as it goes, you're going to spend a four bit more of that than if you just bought the in-game, you know, the purchasable currency. But if you're the type of person like me who's like, no, I'm not going to buy it because screw that. You really don't have to.
There's enough. It's just outfits and cosmetic stuff. And like you don't even need that stuff. I'm just a dude in my underwear running around snowboarding. And that's all you need.
I don't usually get super into that stuff either. Like in the cosmetic stuff. I mean, it's kind of neat, because if you go into the race in the beginning, you notice how everyone's in the default clothes and you're playing a mass race. It's just like a clone war. Going downhill with everyone. But you know, I had to change it up a little bit, put some wacky stuff on. But yeah, I'm with you guys with that. I mean, but if people want to do that stuff, customization, you know, you could actually have a separate loadout for each sport too, which is kind of neat.
And I did buy an outfit with my in-game currency, because I will buy stuff with what they give me, just I'm not going to buy it though. With that said, There are also events, at least I came across at least one, where they give you costumes specifically for the event. Like there was a downhill bike race that day where everybody was wearing a giraffe outfit.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I was like, wow, everyone's dressed up as giraffes.
Yeah, at first I thought it was like a Bloodhound Gang video or something. Everyone was dressed up as like, what was that, Bad Touch, where they dress up as like all different animals and stuff.
Oh, God.
I was like, what the hell is this? But it was great.
It was friggin' amazing.
So, and Carnage, tell us about your time with the game. I know you've been putting an absurd amount of time into this game.
Oh, man. I don't know how much Purnell. It sounds like Purnell got pretty far, too, but I played like probably 35 to 40 hours, and I did like a 7-hour stream when the game came out. Like, I don't even stream a lot, and you guys know I don't do like long ass marathon streams, but this game hooked me more than any game probably the whole year. So, this is definitely like up there, and I don't know, just the game in general. So to me, it feels like this is the way I would describe the game overall for people that might not be familiar with, you know, the way it's, you know, extreme sports or whatever. Like this game feels like their previous game, Steep. Remember that one where it was all about snowboarding and they had some snow sports, not just, you know, in this one, it expands it, as Purnell was saying, with bikes and other vehicles and things like that. And just, it just goes crazy with like, it's basically Steep mixed with Tony Hawk, Trials, Descenders, and even Forza Horizon, because the way that the world works, I'm sure, I think, Joe, you noticed that as well. And I don't know if Purnell, if you played Forza, but you guys know how the open world aspects in that game are very similar to this one.
No, yeah, I like how this game has a fog of war where until you go into that area, you can't really see what's going on in the area. But when you right. touch down in a new area, it pops up and it's like, hey, there's a collectible to be found here. Oh, there's a landmark to be found here. There's a relic to be found here. Before I even unlocked like all of the abilities, I think I'm still waiting to do the stunt downhill snow stuff. Like, it's something you unlock later in the game. I already found all the fucking landmarks.
Yeah, you didn't find all the collectibles though. Yeah, that's insane. They have like 500 fucking collectibles in the game. Really? If you want to mess with it. Yeah, there's the R's. I don't know if they give you anything aside for, I think you only need like 200 for an achievement, thankfully. They weren't dicks and like make you search for every last one, but
yeah, there's little RR balloons scattered everywhere across the map and in the weirdest spots. And they give you a money boost for every one you break.
And then I know, Purnell, you mentioned earlier, too, the relics. I don't know if you guys got all those, but there's a lot of wacky ones. I don't want to spoil all of them, but there's one where you like literally have a jet wing from a plane as your rocket wing thing. It's insane. You can't turn for shit, but you know, you can use your boost very quickly and get anywhere you want in the world. But it's cool that there's different play styles. Like you were saying, you could play and do all the tons of events, which I'm still unlocking new events like at this point, 30 something hours into the game, and I've been doing a lot of single player. You know, that's aside from, it's not just the mass race, like you said, online. You can play with the 64 player race, which is a lot of fun, but there's a ton of stuff to do single player as well.
You don't even need to interact with other people if you don't want to. You'll see them on the map, but you don't have to fuck around with them if you don't want to. You could just, if you want, just go into the pool, switch to your stationary bike, and just pedal in place for 2 hours. If that's what you really want to do in this game, that's what you can do in this game.
And also worth noting now, if you think about it, so we were talking about how you can explore this massive map and whatnot, but we forgot to mention just how seamless it ends up being, because there's multiple types of vehicles you can use in this game, and each event generally works around a specific type of vehicle. But if you're doing like just general exploration type stuff, you can just equip a vehicle at will. Like, just like, I want to ride a bike right now, and you can switch to your bike.
Yep.
Or I want to use my rocket bike right now, you can switch to that. Or a snowmobile, or a wingsuit. Any of those things, if you want to rock them, you can just like, bam, just bring them up on a wheel and start rocking them.
And the wheel, and you're all set. I mean, you could even do it in midair, right? You can just have the bike and then land in skis or go in a wing and go up in the air. Yeah, it's just fun.
It's like, I expected none of this. I had hope, but at the same time, I guess with like mass market, sometimes I was expecting not so great. And now I've come from being that guy to being like, this game is really freaking good. Like, if you play games like this normally, this is just worth having. Like, I can't fathom not buying this if I played this type of game in general. And honestly, I do play games like this. So it's perfect for me. Like, it's like a good game.
Very fun and addicting. I mean, like Joe was saying too, you know, if you don't want to even just do events single player or online, Joe, just exploring around and taking your time and filling. It's beautiful environments, you know, just fun.
And if relaxing. You're playing on a Series X or PS5, you could do it all with basically zero load times.
Also, if I understand something correctly too, like, so let's say you and a friend buy this game, right? A specific friend, and you want to play with that friend and not with the massive herd. You can go to the main hub area and issue direct challenges to your friends. I'm like, hey, I want to race you at StacyCon 94. And you can do that. And it'd be great. Because
you can get in the squad or whatever.
And it's just something cool about that too. Cause a lot of times with games like this, they kind of forget the whole, what about the personal angle? If I just want to play with my friends and no one else, well, you can do that shit because they thought ahead and it's worth doing. It's just, I am genuinely glad this game exists and I didn't expect it to be great, but I am glad it's great. And more people should hear, because that's the other thing. Like, this is going to just be me talking here and asking a question. Did they talk this game up much up until, like, you know, like a week before it came out? Because I didn't really hear about the game like a week or two, and I was like, yes, this looks really interesting.
Not a ton. They didn't have, I mean, granted, it is a new IP, but it's kind of based on, like I was saying, the Steep. You know, I don't know if you played Steep before, but it's kind of
a snowboarding game, right?
Yeah, it's kind of the spiritual successor to that. And, you know, they expanded on that. So anyone that was familiar with that, I know what you mean. It's not like, it wasn't super hyped up. And, you know, they also had delayed it at one point. So, you know, it's kind of, I don't know if it kind of fell off the map a little bit at one point. But I'm glad that it, you know, obviously it's amazing. And we all love it.
So. Well, it's here. It's $60. Pernell, what do you think?
Oh, this is a solid buy. Like, no question about it. It ticks all the boxes for this type of game. And I honestly can't even think of the only potential negative I can think of is if they can the world, would it work single player? And I can imagine it has the framework potential for that to still be doable. So, I mean, as it is and as the product as it stands now, it's 100% worth your money. This is great.
Carnage, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite games of the year, no doubt about it. I do have one minor gripe. I don't know if you guys noticed this too. It kind of didn't explain that well about the progression stuff, like how you actually get to the big events and then the boss events at the end for each sport. I don't know. I know it's stars in general, but they don't explain exactly all the progression stuff.
He did it in the whole, you know, I'm really cool, gnarly kind of way. He was like, hey, man, you want to get some groovy, you want to get some hot stuff, get some cheddar, you know, earn some stars.
That might have been why it might have been a little cringe, and I was like, oh, whatever.
They explained it. I just couldn't understand it.
Yeah,
I'm too old.
Like, radical
trust me, that's 100% what he, like, trust me, that's exactly what he did, because he was like, he was talking it up in a way where he was like, you want to get the real cheese. I'm like,
yeah.
Dude, okay, bruh.
Burger and relax.
Yeah, but either way, like, it wasn't a big deal, because I was just, you know, doing tons of different events of whatever I wanted to get to next, and it's easy to get into something, you know, switch sport, do a different one, like, it's crazy the amount of variety. I know we can talk about this for hours probably, but...
We should mention one more thing. I just thought about this. So we mentioned that there's a lot of different sports in the game, different, you know, vehicles that you work with and the events for those. Let's say you're playing the game and you just decide willy-nilly, I hate doing tricks, or I don't really like the bike races at all. I never want to do a bike race again. Well, technically, you don't even have to play those. You can focus on completely different vehicles and ignore the ones you don't want. Like, you're not required to do the events you don't like. And that is a very important detail.
I agree with that. I want to add to that, too, because there's five different, like, sub-campaigns, and each one has its own level. So, like you said, you can just be, like, level 20 in snowboarding if you love that. But if you don't like biking, you don't have to do that one. It's, like, level 2 in biking. You know, you don't have to worry about it. And you can get to the boss event of each sport by just doing that one sport. If you do multi-events, there are multi-sport events that are kind of neat, too, where you just go from biking to, like, instantly going to the line and switching to, you know, a rocket wing. And vice versa. But in those, you actually level up all of the sports that are in that together. So that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah. Overall, it's just
amazing.
Yeah. Overall, just a really solid product. I think the best way to put this is Forza Horizon for extreme sports.
Yeah. Forza Horizon mixed with like Elements of Trials, Tony Hawk games, every type of game.
Yes, that's
that
why
love.
I said that's for I extreme love. Sports.
Yes, you're right.
That
you're
encompasses right. I rest my case. The Tony Hawk.
Yes, I listen. See, I didn't listen to the guy in the game, but I listened to you, maybe.
Bruh, you got a totes listen all up yeah. in this. yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, more time, but gnarlier.
Dude, you got to fucking buy this game. It's totally radical and tubular.
Tubular. Also tubular.
That's a cooler way to say tubular.
Tubular is how George Bush pronounces tubular.
Tubular. That's just my strategery.
Oh, jeez. Oh, all right, we got to move on. Next game we'll talk about is called Dungeon Encounters, developed and published by Square Enix. Code provided by Square Enix for the purpose of this review, so thank you, Square. Released October 14th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. An otherworldly labyrinth has suddenly appeared on the outskirts of a quiet town. Make clever use of your abilities and chart the depths, overcome obstacles, and defeat your foes in thrilling battles. Chris, tell us about Dungeon Encounters.
Gladly. Okay. So, I don't know what that was.
Gladly.
Square Enix, well, we know them from putting out pretty much all the RPGs in the 80s and 90s and unto today. So here's the thing. Square made Final Fantasy and Enix made Dragon Quest, more or less. And the inspiration for Final Fantasy was Dragon Quest. The inspiration for Dragon Quest was Ultima. The inspiration for Ultima was Wizardry. And Wizardry is one of the original dungeon crawlers, right? But going up to Square, you know, they hit on a good thing with like making basically a fancier version of Dragon Quest and kind of changing it up. So they never really thought, let's go make a dungeon crawler. Until this year, when suddenly they were like, let's make a dungeon crawler, an old school dungeon crawler from Square, from the Final Fantasy people. There are actually Final Fantasy people that worked on this game is the reason I said. So they all got in a room and one of them was like, okay, we made Final Fantasy way back in the day, but we don't know what dungeon crawlers are. What's a dungeon crawler? And they're like, it's an RPG that you play where you have to like, you know, you have to make a map on grid paper. They're like, a map on grid paper? And they're like, yeah. I was like, okay, that's our game. We're going to make a game on grid paper. So their idea of a dungeon crawler is not a first-person dungeon crawler like Wizardry. It's that they took the graph paper part and put the game on top of that.
That's awesome.
Interesting.
So you are a team, just like a dungeon crawler. You assemble your team. This is, instead of rolling your characters, they're actually pre-made characters. And excuse me. And then you proceed to move around literally a grid with blocks and like numbers on it and stuff like that. And what do the numbers mean? Well, if you stand on them, they'll tell you. Like number 02, I think, is how you 01 is how you descend to a deeper level if it's white. 02 is like will bring you back upstairs. They're not even stairs aren't even graphically represented in this game. Then there's events. When you land on an event, then something will happen. It'll tell you in flavor text. As you uncover the maps, a little bit like Final Fantasy 4 DS or some of the other remakes, if you uncover all of the tiles on a map, let's say 228 is on the first floor, which is the academy, quote unquote, it's kind of like your hub. Then you get ability points, and if you step on a tile that has an ability on it, then you get to equip that ability onto your party, and it'll be something like, see the enemies on the map. And you're like, okay, great, let's see some enemies. Now, yeah, I can see my guy here, I should be able to see some enemies. And the enemies on the map are black numbers. And they started...
Why do you need black numbers, Chris?
I'm right with you. I'm there with you, Pernell. This is problematic, to say the least. anyway, yeah, like 00. Well, like the number starts at 00, and as it gets higher, the danger of the enemies is larger. But they're not random. They're right there on the map. They'll seem random if you don't have that ability equipped. Anywho's, you get into the battle, and then it occurs where there's like basically three. They almost look like cards. Like, you know, you'd see your character's face on a stat screen. Well, like, that's how they're presented in this game. like, you know, in Final Fantasy VI, when you paused it, you got to see, like, your character portraits. Like, that's what they look like in this game. And they'll be on the right side, enemy on the left side. And it's all this thing of, like, if you have a weapon equipped that does 30 damage, it will always do 30 damage to the enemy. But the enemy can have two different kinds of defenses, and you can have two different kinds of attacks. They have physical defense and magic defense. And you, your character can either equip a physical weapon or a magical spell, which is a magic weapon. And the idea is that before you can harm that enemy, you have to take out one of those defenses. So the idea is that if you hit them with your sword for 30 attack, it will take 30 off their defense until it hits zero. And then once it hits zero, then only physical attacks will cause that HP to go down. So it's one of those things where it's like, if an enemy has a whole bunch of physical defense, then you might want to switch to magic to whittle down that magic defense before you can start hurting them. And so on and so forth. There's like, and some enemies are just like, if you bust through your defenses, then you've pretty much won. Like skeletons, for instance, only have one HP. And, you know, at that point, when the enemy attacks you, then it's going to, you know, they're going to do the same. You know, they're going to attack until they whittle down your defenses to nothing, and then they will start whittling down your actual HP, which is bad, of course. Even though every floor of the dungeon, at least that I've explored so far, has a free healing tile that you can just walk to any time after a battle.
Oh, they
and
disappear. they go away. Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Hardcore.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You'll eventually get into a whole lot of danger, and you may lose your party. If you lose your party, you gotta start a new party and go rescue that other party, just like wizardry. And if you lose all of your party members, then it's game over completely.
Ooh,
damn.
Yeah, and don't go thinking that you can just close your switch real quick and then get out of this. It auto saves pretty much every time something happens. So yeah. And I learned actually a real, real interesting lesson. So if your team is on the ropes and it doesn't seem like you can get anywhere without dying, you can actually abandon the party there and then just pick a new party and go rescue them. I found out if you actually do a silly experiment by abandoning your party on the academy, the very first floor, your new party can't find them. I have no idea how to get my first party back. That I lost.
They're in the secret basement.
I guess so. So I kind of accidentally lost all my progress by abandoning my party in the actual like hub.
Oh no!
Oh no!
Pro tip: the gamers out there.
For play testing.
Your party was late to the party.
Yeah, exactly.
I definitely want to add a few things too, just in case. This is some stuff that I came across. I'm gonna tell you something. I don't want to give my general opinion. Well,
you can. You just don't get a code out of it.
Touche. Well, in that case, I'm gonna lead out by saying that I've been addicted to this game for I don't know why. I shouldn't like it, but I fucking love this game. Like, and there's like some weird thing they do with it too. Like, so there's an enemy that's like a pharaoh type enemy, right? And he was doing this ability that kept missing. And I was like, what the hell is that do? I'm afraid of what's going to happen when it finally connects. And then it did. It petrifies you. And when it petrifies you, you're stone. And they're done. But here's the rub. I was like, okay, well, the battle will be over and I'll just take them to a purification spring, which is one of the event tiles, and they'll be fine. Fuck no, you ain't. When you get petrified, you can't leave that spot. You have to abandon them there. Like, literally drop them off and come back for them. You have to find a specific place and then know the coordinates to where you left them and say, heal the guy on that tile. And then go back and get them.
Oh, yeah.
Damn, this game is hardcore as shit.
Yeah,
what kind of evil math teacher made this game graphically? Like, what the hell?
I actually could tell you. That was actually going to be the next part of my review. Thank you for that accidental segue. The director of this game, interestingly, is Hiroyuki Ito, who, if you didn't know, is probably because you haven't like been reviewing games for 15 years, because he was the director of Final Fantasy VI. He invented the active battle system that they used from Final Fantasy IV onward, and he helmed Final Fantasy XII. So he came out of like this kind of weird like disappeared forever retirement to like make this game. And he brought like some other people that worked on like Final Fantasy 12, and Nobuo Uematsu did the soundtrack, which is crazy to me because there's, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Pernell, because you seem like you got further than me. There's like no map music, right? It's only music in the
map. It's weird. Like the map is like sound effects, and then the battle music is literally Nobuo Uematsu in his garage with a guitar saying, yeah. You know, I really like that classical song. I'm going to strum it.
Yeah, the nice. Music, the hub music's great. It's this acoustic sound. It sounds exactly like an Uematsu like town track, but only on an acoustic guitar. And then when you get into a battle, it's just three electric guitars playing. There's no drums, no bass, like no beat anywhere in this game. It's so odd and minimal.
Weird.
But having said all that, I wanted to get all that out of the way first, just to say, for somebody who likes dungeon crawlers, who actually plays Wizardry, who, you know, considers Etrian Odyssey to be like just this absolute masterpiece, I love this game.
Yes! I was hoping so you'd say good. That.
Yeah, it is so good. It hits all of the right notes of like getting you into this loop of like seeing some goals and trying to reach them. One great move that they did is that the shops. So you got shops that are weird. It's and they're on the hub floor, but you've got the Chimera's arms, and if you access it, it's actually being sold by a Chimera. You've got like the skeleton's defense, which is a skeleton selling you armor despite not even having skin, and things like that. And when you access those shops, you can purchase stuff that like, you know, is appropriate for your level, but then you can see stuff that like clearly is meant for like level 99, which is like, you know, the last floor of this game. You can actually take a look and see how many tiles there are in each floor, even ones you haven't been to yet. Some of them get up to over 3,000 tiles.
Oh, wow.
For a single floor. Floor 91, which I have not gotten to yet.
I didn't even know about that part. But that scares the shit out of me, and yet also intrigues me, because there's intriguing. A certain drug, there's a certain addiction that comes from filling that map. And it's doubly dangerous because there's no actual map. So
exactly.
If you like leave a floor and come back, I'm like, what did I miss? Well, good luck, bitch.
sometimes you'll be missing one tile on a floor, and it's because there's a secret tile that you got to find, and it's very subtle, but there.
Oh, man.
But yeah, if you look at the exploration log, the total tiles in this entire game is 88,138.
And I gotta tell you, there's some other secretive stuff too. So like, later on, not too later on, but like maybe on like floor like six or eight, you get two abilities off the bat. One called Lesser Ascension and one called Lesser Descension. And what that does is it will allow you to tunnel up or down one floor as long as there is a corresponding tile in the respective spot.
Nice.
And there are certain tiles you can only reach if you know where you're burrowing up to. Like, I found a few where it was like, I wrote down the coordinates. I was like, okay, I'm going to run up to the top floor and see if I can get down from a respective tile. I was able to find one tile that fit in the match. It's like, boom, went down and got a cool battle ability. This is worth it. This is good.
Yeah. And like, okay, so that kind of brings me to like my overall point of this game before I get to the actual score, because this has gone on so long.
Yes.
So people are like, why are games today not as good as games back then? The answer is not because you're old. It's because people who made games back then are freaking geniuses, like Hiroyuki Ito and, you know, Uematsu and stuff. They made a game out of grid paper, and it's like one of the best things I've played in like a month at least. So,
wow.
And it makes you sad, right? Like, I've heard, I can't speak for you, but have you heard anybody talk about this game? And I admit, I was one of them at first, but I bought it on a whim that said, this game does not look like it's $30. It literally looks like three amateurs sat down and just like carved it out just to make some quick cash.
I love that it looks that
fucking
way.
Wrong.
It
was so
totally
wrong.
Isn't. It's the very definition of a hidden gem, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially after hearing all those Final Fantasy, the people that worked on it, you know, like, had some part in it. So it definitely deserves more attention.
There were other people besides Ito, but I didn't write him down. So sorry. You can find that information.
Hey, Carnage, good thing for us, it's on literally everything but Xbox.
Womp, womp. I would love to see it on Xbox. It sounds quite unique.
Unique.
Chug chug.
No, it's really 30 is. Bucks. So, Chris, what do you say about Dungeon Encounters?
So here's the thing. I can't just say buy it because there are some RPG fans who are going to pick this up and absolutely hate it and will have spent 30 bucks on something they can't even play. So I'm going to say if you're a dungeon crawler fan, if you understand anything about like wizardry, even up to stuff like, you know, Darkspire or Etrian Odyssey or, you know, newer stuff, then you'll find something to like here. But yeah, if you are just a general JRPG fan, especially coming from like a Final Fantasy style game, you're going to be playing this game and you're like, okay, so when's the graphics and music DLC pack?
Where's the love interest going to show?
When are the graphics?
When are the graphics?
When are graphics? But for people like me and like Purnell, yes, it's a buy it. Go try this out if you're on the fence about it, but you think you can hang with the hardcore.
And worth noting, do not, I swear to God, don't be fooled by the look. Like, the look even works for the game when you're actually playing it. But if you're looking at screenshots on the eShop, I can totally understand someone being like,
"Yeah,
I don't see all that much here." But the game is in the experience.
The art's that's great. You
take the chance.
Yeah, the artist for it, I believe, also worked on Final Fantasy XII. So. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Man. That's great awesome. Stuff. It's a very hard sell going on here for me.
It's game. Really fucking good, man. Like, I kid you not. Yeah. Like, I started playing it on a whim because, like, Joe's like, you like this game? I was like, I already have it. But then he's like, I should, darn it. I was like, give it to Chris. Chris will love it. But then I was like, now I got to play more of it just to confirm my feelings. And then it's I just like became obsessed with it. I called off work sick today. I was actually sick, mind you. But I was like,
sure you were.
No, I really was. Pernell, you don't have to worry about me when saying give Chris
the game. He's playing sick games.
I have reviewed every Gilson DuPontis game that's come out.
I don't want to pass a Gilson DuPontis-like game to you. Like, hey, give it to Chris. Let him suffer. Like, that's not how I roll. I want to give you good games. I want to pass.
Yeah, only authentic Gilson DuPontis games.
Thanks, Pernell.
Let's hope those don't come to Xbox, by the way.
Oh, jeez. All right, well, moving on. Next game to talk about is The Legend of Tianding, developed by CGCG, published by Neon Doctrine, released November 1st on Switch and PC for $19.99. Explore the dazzling streets of colonial Japanese Taiwan in the early 20th century in this side-scrolling action game. Tim, tell us about this one.
Oh, man, we've talked about so many great games tonight. Wouldn't it be so bad if a bad game showed up to ruin it?
Oh, no.
No, that's not this one. This game's actually also great.
Oh, okay, thank God.
Cool. Like, don't steal my thing, man.
No, Joe will tell you, it's definitely shitting in the cereal of games has been my calling card for several years now. Anyways. With that lovely intro, yeah, okay, Legend of Tianding. So this is a side-scrolling beat-em-up style action game that is just kind of as an overview is pretty damn solid over all around. But what really makes it stand out is it does have a very interesting setting that you don't see represented in video games very much, which is, yeah, around the turn of the century, the turn of the 20th century, or, you know, 1900, to put a date on it.
The old days.
The old days, well over 100 years ago, when Taiwan was under Japanese occupation after one of, like, the 800 wars between China and Japan. But Japan was going hard on colonizing, and they had this... who went on to become sort of a Robin Hood-ish folk hero, Tianding. So the game takes place in 1900 Taipei, a certain section of the city, and you play as this character as you are fighting Japanese colonizers. The game is presented as a comic book, like in manga style, and that goes from the cutscenes between levels to just the general aesthetic. It looks like the game was ripped from comic book pages, just nice cell shading, like hard dark lines around the characters and these nice looking colorful backgrounds. So the game is kind of divvied up in between between sections where you are running around the city doing it's fucking fetch quests. And I mean, really, a lot of time that's what they are. It's just, hey, Chunjin, can you go here and grab this for me and then come here and do this and then go talk to this guy over there? And then, you know, eventually you get to doing levels. Like, there's not. There's a substantial amount of that stuff, and it's not bad because you're getting a feel for the city and the characters and Chanjing's place in that city and kind of how he is revered and looked at and generally well liked. But you will get into combat areas, which are just breakout, and then there's, you know, it's a whole side scrolling level. So you're going around in combat. In these levels, you've got your basic combo. You get a double jump almost right away, which is pretty much a strong hallmark of a good game. You get special attacks, which map to your whatever that right hand button is on your respective controller. And so basically, like, you'll push a direction and push this button, and it's like, oh, I'm going to do a kick up in the air, which will act as a launcher if I'm on the ground, or I will do a flying kick to the side, or I will do a ground pound if I'm in the air, or I will do the 1-inch punch, which will send an enemy flying and is hilarious and satisfying every time. But you can work those moves into combos, you know, bap, 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 basic combo, knock him up into the air, bap, 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 hit him to the side, hit him to the ground, knock them around, this, that, the other thing. When you get an enemy at about half health, I think it is, you can then use your he has a red sash tied around his waist. You can then whip an enemy with your sash to steal their weapon away. And then you have a weapon in your hands, and each weapon acts differently, has different properties, different, like, kind of a little, not like a, it's not super complicated and it has a wildly different move set, but, you know, it's a large two-handed axe swings much slower than a small one-handed police baton. And some enemies have guns and bazookas and grenades. And yeah, you could just, I was just like, are they going to let me swipe this rocket launcher from this guy? Yes, they will. They will let you swipe this rocket launcher from this guy. Blow dudes up. So that's great. You got a dodge roll for escaping attacks and traps, which eventually gets upgraded and with a couple different flavors. But the first flavor you get creates a shadow clone of yourself that just, so when you do an attack, it does double damage because you're hitting twice. So yeah, you have all these tools at your disposal in combat when enemies come out, and the game is really good. Like, even, you know, ranged characters notoriously suck in, like, I don't know, any kind of combat game because they're shooting you from far away, but they do a good job of, like, when a gunman is aiming at you from off screen, you see a nice red line cutting across, and it gets more intense as it gets closer to shooting you. So that's very nice and fair. It is just, it's just generally a hell of a good time beating dudes up, smacking them around, throwing them around the screen, knocking them up in the air, dodging around, doing stuff to them, stealing weapons from this guy, then using it on that guy, and then stealing more weapons. Each weapon has a like durability rating or an ammo count, so they don't last forever, but that's fine because you're just grabbing one after the next to get you through combat. As you're traversing these areas have the areas are pretty big. Like, each combat section is honestly maybe even like a little bit too long, but they do sprawl outward. There's like lots of secrets to find as you're traversing. There's traps and platforming challenges. You do get like a grappling hook, which you can use to swing off of things. But yeah, lots of secrets to find stashed away. And a lot of it is just, you know, instead of just being like basic collectibles, like each kind of random little collectible doodad you find gives you a like small bonus to something, which might be like just increasing the amount of gold that, or money that enemies drop, or increasing the amount of ammo or durability of certain weapons, or giving you a bonus to this or that. And it's very small, but you can find these things like repeatedly. Like, you'll get the same items kind of over and over again, and they stack up over time to help make your character more powerful and more powerful. So it's like never a waste, really. It's never like, oh, I got another like one of 20, you know, random marbles over here, but you know, they don't do anything. No, everything you find, it does something, and that's a cool thing. So yeah, when you're running around, the city has like 5, 6, 7 different areas in it. And as you're running around, like characters, you get quests inside the city, but you also get, there's also shopkeepers where you can buy weapons from, or like expand your healing item. You can, there's like a little, like, I don't know, some kind of food item that you can carry many pieces of to heal yourself. So yeah, you can expand your food pouch. You also have a talisman pouch, which you can fit like these little talismans in, which give you other more significant bonuses in combat. Like one gives you a triple jump, which is pretty great. And believe it or not, I had that equipped all the damn time after I got it. Some that, you know, power up your shadow attacks, some that power up other things. So just more ways to customize your character. There are characters that will give you side quests that require you to go back to previous levels to find items. That is something I found tedious and kind of a pain in the ass, because those levels are big and there is no way to fast travel around them. So it's like, man, I don't know where your shit is in this giant sewer. The rewards are certainly, you know, worthwhile, but I just ain't got the time, man. I got to review this game. but, you know, it is something to go back and revisit levels, and you can pop back out of levels at save points. There's save points interspersed through levels that also heal you and save the game and refill your meaty health buns. Yeah, and it's just a really fun game, top to bottom. It's got good graphics. It's got good music to it. It's just, yeah, a really interesting setting. There's a few nitpicks. I mentioned, like, the combat levels, I think, can sometimes drag on a bit. Revisiting levels is not that great. Some of the later... So when you die, you lose money, which is questionable sometimes, like especially on a boss where there's always a save point right before them. So it's like, do I want to lose 2,000 yen to this boss, or do I just want to quit out of the game and load it back up and not lose that money and try again? And there's just kind of there's a little bit of cheap bullshit in the last couple levels. And the last boss seems like a giant asshole as well.
That seems par for the course with games in this genre.
Yeah, it's just like, but it's just like, there's a train level. There's things that kill you instantly in the last couple levels, and I really don't appreciate that. Especially because
that's never good.
Well, it's never good. But it's made a bit worse here because the levels are so vertical that you don't always see the bottom, especially in like the last level. You don't always see like, oh, I am falling into lava and I am now dead. At least on the train, there's a train level. Like, yes, you can see where there's a hole in the floor of the train. If you fall through it, you'll die. It's more apparent there, though still annoying when it happens. But, you know, that's only in a couple levels and it's manageable. It's just annoying. It didn't make me like want to die. It didn't make me throw my Switch across the room. It was not an obstacle, that big of an obstacle to me getting through. And it was just like, ah, come on, guys. Really? Like, really? Come on.
Yeah.
But not a deal breaker, in my opinion.
Well, overall, the game is $20. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think it's well worth it. It really, you know, if it didn't have such an interesting and unique setting, it might like just kind of fade into the crowd a little bit more. But I think that's something that really makes the game stand out more and be more worth like actually like, no, this isn't just a good game. It's like it's a good game that you should like really check out because it's got some cool stuff going on with it. Cool. I really liked it.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Well, that is it for you, Tim. We'll let you get going.
Yeah. I have two thoughts. Yeah. I know you're going to ask.
Let's hear them.
Okay, so I remember, like, I've been super tired because of daylight savings, and I just like to call out, daylight savings Stan Purnell, for being an asshole and wrong.
I don't even remember what I said. What did I say about daylight savings?
You said you like daylight savings. You were like, we talked about it back in the spring. You were like, oh man, daylight savings, it's the best. I love it. I'm Purnell. This is how I talk.
Literally, the only thing I quote unquote like about daylight savings is getting the hour, the 1 hour, mind you, that you get from it. Beyond that, I'm indifferent to it.
No,
but
I think I will follow this with another point
because for the life of me, aside from, I get when people are like, I miss having the extra hour of sunlight. I get that. What I will never get are folks who are like, I just can't adjust to the hour I lost, or I am busted and broken on as far as like my sleep schedule. It's a fucking hour. And if you put yourself to sleep before the hour shift and you set all your clocks, you don't even notice it happen.
Let me tell you how you notice it happens, Purnell. You have a child who doesn't care about what time is.
You give that kid some sugar if it's a gained hour, or you give him some freaking like whiskey if it's a lost hour.
Give your child whiskey.
Look how vehemently he's defending you.
Mountain Dew drinks.
Give him sugar, whiskey.
No, and then the truth came out. Go back and listen to that episode, like.
Right. There was an episode specific? Because now I want to know.
Previously on the SML podcast.
Necco wafers are delicious. I guess it's just a
Necco wafers culture. Are fucking disgusting. I think less of you as a person now. I am not fucking around. They are terrible.
And now, the thrilling continuation of the SML podcast.
Yeah, oh, daylight savings time.
Fucking yeah. You were spouting a lot of garbage on that.
Yeah, was daylight savings time. That's a trip. But this weekend. I did the moving furniture on that Saturday night. I got back and I was like, you know, daylight savings is kicking in. I don't fucking care. I'm going to sit here and play video games. And I was up playing games through the hour shift, then went to bed and I didn't set any of my clocks. My cell phone is the only proper clock right now. And I'm just like, well, whatever. It's Sunday. I'll set the clock for work tomorrow when I have to. And I just woke up willy nilly and went to the movies later that day. Nothing felt lost. I wasn't off kilter. Nothing happened. I gave my kid whiskey. I was good.
I'm a big proponent of one, giving kids whiskey kid. Just because.
That kid got whiskey. That's why I have a kid. Because he's had whiskey. The whiskey joke aside about not because I don't have any kids, I still like all that other stuff was legit. Like I went to bed. I woke up. Time was traveling. And I'll admit, I can't speak for folks who have kids because the only experience I've ever had with kids was when I was like with my nephew and he was living with me in that regard. But even then, I never experienced any incidents even at that time. I was like, why are you up so goddamn early? He wakes up on a Sunday. Here you go. Make you go to bed. What's going on? I don't know, whatever. Go to bed. 9 o'clock. But it's not. Yes, it is. There's the clock. Go to bed. But I'm not tired. Well, you better fucking be tired. Go to bed.
I like how even goodbyes turn into 10-minute Purnell tangents.
I came at him.
He broke it. Yeah, I don't know if I believe a word he says.
He references a lot of these reviews with, to be honest. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. It really makes me wonder.
I'll admit, that's honestly a tick. Because I do it all the time.
My go-to is basically I haven't said it too much yet. I probably didn't. I didn't realize it. Everyone has their own.
Yeah. Like I had a professor whose tick was always his thing was in this particular case. I'm like, what is it not this case?
I mean, someone's is unique.
Anyway, my second thought.
There's another reason to say fuck Purnell. Damn.
I mean, that wasn't the second thought, but I mean, if you want me to. Anyways, the hell was I going to say? Oh, Nickelodeon All Stars Brawl. That started popping up for $20. I reviewed that last month and I was like, hey, that would be great for cheaper. And $20 is a great price. It's not $20 right now, but it happened once. So it's going to happen again in the next month.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And also, BPM bullets per minute is in the Humble Choice bundle this month. So you can get that. And actually, Turnip Boy says, fuck it to taxes. That's not the name of the game, but it's something like that. That's in there, too, which I reviewed back in the spring. Turnip Boy commits tax evasion. That's also in that same bundle. So two games I reviewed positively this year are in the same bundle.
In the Humble Eka bundle.
The Humble Eka bundle. Well, I don't know about the other 10 games in it, but those two those two alone probably make. I mean, BPM just came out and it's already in there. So
review them.
Going forward, I'm kind of stuck with the idea of calling it Turnip Boy Says Fuck It to Taxes now. I can't go back. I can't go back from that.
It's a really fun game.
Turnip Boy Says Fuck It to Daylight Savings Time.
Oh man, I'm so
probably
mad.
That would be that bastard.
I am writing them a letter. Please, next one. Turnip Boy Says Fuck It to Daylight Savings Time.
You're gonna write a letter, aren't you?
Absolutely. I'm gonna put a stamp on it and everything. Oh shit! I gotta send. Never mind. All right. I gotta go.
All right, any final words, Tim?
Those were my final words. Jesus Christ.
Okay, Joe. Well, like, I'm just checking.
And then he's still like.
Just, I'm making sure so that there's not just some awkward, okay, bye, click.
No, that's how
this party has gone awkward.
Okay, bye, click.
Bye, click.
Awkward.
Quick update. I cannot finish this Pepsi Cracker Jack because it is not that good.
See, Joe was the guinea pig.
Just the peanut. The peanut taste for it is just throwing me off. I can't do it. Anyway.
Is that Pepsi a deny it?
Hmm?
Is it Pepsi a deny it?
Yeah, the Cracker Jack Pepsi is a deny it.
No.
So don't bother winning that contest. Next game to talk about is Circa Infinity. Jesus Christ.
See what the Cracker Jack did.
Goddamn Cracker Jack soda. Next game to talk about is Circa Infinity, developed by Kenny Sun, published by Red Deer Games. It released November 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Switch for $12.99. Reach the core of each level by slipping through a series of circular layers. Time your jumps carefully to avoid the creatures that reside within the circles and reach the next layer. As you go deeper, the action gets faster and more challenging. Can you keep up? Purnell, tell us about Circa Infinity.
I gotta say, here's another case of, I feel like this is one of the best reasons to be doing this show, is that I keep seeing these games that I'll look at and go, yeah, I'm not playing that. And then I'll get a chance to try it for free. And then the takeaway becomes, if I only known what I know now, goddamn, because this is the game that helped me keep my freaking sanity over the last couple of days, because I was addicted to it. It's really, really good. And if you look at it on the shop, it looks like a bunch of gibberish. Like, it makes no sense on the screen there. But the actual game is legit. The way it works is that every stage is a circle that has multiple layers. You start out on the outer side of the circle. And when you're running outside the circle by pressing the A button, you kind of sink into the floor. Every circle that you're running around, there's like a pie slice cut out of it. That's kind of, you can tell there's like a piece of the pie cut out. And if you run over that section of the circle and press A to sink into the floor, you go inside the circle. And now you're running on the inside ring of the circle. So outside the circle, then you go into the circle. And once you're in the circle, now the A button makes you jump. And your goal inside the circle is to jump and reach the next layer circle that's floating in that room. So once you jump on it, you're now running on the outside of that circle. Think of games like, I love the popular name Mighty Milky Way. No one has fucking played that game. But games where you run around on spheroids or whatever. Think of that concept. So every level essentially consists of you running outside of a circle to find the pie slice, to sink into it, thereby putting you inside the circle, to jump to the next circle and do it again and again and again. Now, if that was all you did, that'd be pretty fucking boring. But fortunately, the game makes sure to make it as frustrating as possible for you to pull that off successfully, because this game has enemies. This game has a fair variety of enemies, and they will fuck your day up. They will make you very angry when they screw up your perfect run, because that's what they freaking do. And it starts out really simple. You'll get a little enemy who'll just stand there. And if you run into him, you'll die. So naturally, you'll jump over him or you'll run in the direction opposite him if he somehow happens to be on the outside of a ring. It's easy peasy. Then you'll come across a guy who's really tall. The really tall guy, you can't jump over him because he's too tall. So you can only go in the opposite direction from him. And then one day you'll end up on the outside of a circle, but the tall guy existed on the circle layer you just came from. And you'll learn, holy crap, he can still hurt me from out there because he's really tall, like Purnell is. And then you'll be like, oh, if I sink into the floor, I can evade him by swooping under his head. Awesome peasy. And you'll do that, and you'll keep doing it, and they'll just keep introducing new enemies, new behaviors, new enemies, new behaviors, and it just keeps changing things up. To give you an example of what I mean, like the first level, or the first set of 10 levels, the circle inside is kind of turning as you run. So you're not only trying to like find the pie, but you're also trying to catch it at the point where it's spinning to get onto it and dive into it. So you're trying to keep up with where the circle is at a specific time and also evade the enemies. But at the end of that world, you'll fight a boss. And I'll talk about the bosses in a second. But then when you get to the next world, they change it up. And now the pie slices, they're not spinning anymore. So on one hand, you're like, well, you just took a level element of the puzzling away from me. This should be easier. No, it's not. Because they compensated by doing other bullshit. And you'll have to cope with that, too. Now, all that to be said, you might think, well, Purnell must hate this game because he keeps talking about saying things like bullshit and awful and frustrating. And you'd be freaking wrong because this game is crack to me. The OST is pulsating and it keeps you motivated to press on after every single death. And since they have that little icon at the end of a stage that says you didn't die, and they also have a time, this is how fast you did it. Well, guess what? If I die, I start over because I don't want to beat a level without no deaths. That just doesn't feel good for me. I have to beat levels without dying. So I keep doing it until I get it right, perfectly, every single stage. And there's achievements for that. So those are the kind of achievements that I get hooked on because I get a diamond that pops up on the screen and says, no one's done this. I'm like, well, I did.
Super rare achievement.
Super rare. Yeah. And that feels good. It's like that was not easy to do and no one else has done it. I'm on board for that.
Well, some people have done it, just not many.
None of them. Just me. I'm the only one.
Kind of sounds like Super Meat Boy style, right? Like in that regard.
Is it exactly like that? Exactly like that.
That's cool.
Because while the deaths themselves, even with that one, because like Super Meat Boy didn't care about how many times you died. That was solely about the time. But in regards to like how quickly it dumps you back in, this game does kind of have it. If you do die and you're not like me and that you don't care if you die or not, it kicks you back one layer of your circle run. So you can't just like die and respawn at the exact same spot. That would be too easy. But they kick you back one layer. So you're like, okay. That's a slight penalty, but nothing I can't overcome. I'll just run it through again. So I still start to be snappy enough, because it happens very quickly, that it still has that Meat Boy level of there's no downtime. And even when you restart the stage, it's very quick, very instant. And I'm sure you did that with Super Meat Boy too, because even though they didn't care about your deaths, it did care about how long it took you to beat a stage. So you die at one point in the perfect run, you start that level over because there's no time for death. This is Meat Boy, bitch.
yep. Gotta get it right. Gotta get it perfect. Gotta keep trying.
Gotta go fast.
Is it short levels like Meat Boy where you just kind of, die and try over and over, just right back at it?
And that's pretty much it too. Yeah. Cause like every level, I mean, like levels generally can be done in under a minute, but you'll take longer than that because you want to get the perfection down. So you'll be taking multiple minutes to get a 1 minute run or a couple seconds run. And then, like, they just get rougher and rougher. Like, I'll flat out tell you that, like, one of the hardest things they introduced to the game, and then I'll talk about the boss, because I totally forgot about them, is that at one point they introduced controlling two characters at the exact same time. Not to say, like, cookies and cream where you're actually using two thumbsticks or anything. No, no. You're just moving them simultaneously. So if you're moving one, the other person's moving at the same pace in the opposite direction. But even still, that is another way from the break your brain. We're like, I think I finally got a handle on this now. I understand the direction I'm pressing when I run in a circle, which, by the way, I had to establish that, pressing right implies you're running at the direction that the guy would be running in from the inside of the circle. So if you press right, well, you'll play it when you get it. But that was my way of understanding the game. And then the bosses are just weird in that they're faces. Every boss is a face. And you are either trying to just connect with the face and do damage to it, or you have to get down through multiple layers of his attacks, similar to going through levels, and then eventually kind of meld into his face. It's really strange, and yet it's also really cool because they're always crying. They're always really sad, and they're killing you. They're trying to kill you with tears. It's a strange concept, but again, I loved it, and I'm addicted to this game. It is really good, and I'm going to be sad when it's over. But yeah.
No, it sounds like the review is over. So for the asking price of $12.99, what are your thoughts on Circa Infinity?
It's fantastic at $9.99, but if you buy it right now, hopefully it'll still be running at this price when this episode comes out. On Switch, at least, it's selling for $6.66.
Ah, nice.
So it's even cheaper. Get it. It's worth it.
Yeah. It sounds awesome. Like, from what I've seen on the store at first, like you said, looks can be deceiving. I was like, what the hell is this garbage? And then you just made me, you know, made me want to try it. So
yeah, it's $10.39 on Xbox on sale. So
I'd pay sounds that. Cool. I would pay that for it because it's hit the notes. It's done $10.39 worth of labor for me. Like I've had less fun with more expensive games. It's good.
Oh, I hear you, dude. Yep. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Skeletal Avenger, developed and published by 10 Tons, released November 4th on the Switch for $16.99. Skeletal Avenger is a hack and slash roguelite with a massive perk arsenal and skull chucking special moves. Reanimate skeletons and fight your way to vengeance. Build a new play style. Each run with perks. Loot, explore, avenge, and try to go crazy with perk combos. Chris, tell us about your time with Skeletal Avenger.
I think that said it all.
No, all right, then, for...
hey, I mean, come on.
I mean, we did talk about this one a few weeks ago when it hit Xbox and PlayStation. Is the port to the Switch?
Okay, so, well, it's great, for one. because for one thing, it's like if you play it in portable mode, you can actually read it, and that's usually my one and only criteria for is it good on Switch. Can I read it? Yes. Yeah, so, well, just because it's new to me, I might as well talk about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, Skeletal Avenger, and by the way, I was, like, trying for, like, several minutes here to figure out which other roguelike game it kind of reminded me of, and I wasn't able to find it in my list of Switch games. I couldn't get to the bottom. So, yeah, I have too many Switch games, but that doesn't mean don't give me more. anywho's. So this is a rogue light, and big emphasis on the light, to be honest. It may even reach another definition of the term, but it is a dungeon crawler, isometric style, the other kind of dungeon crawler besides wizardry and dungeon encounters. This one is kind of like, it feels, except for the fact that there's the presence of blood, it feels like Diablo for kids. You play as a reanimated skeleton who is trying to get his vengeance on whoever killed him. And this necromancer who conveniently raises him from the dead and kind of runs the game's hub is like, I don't know who did it. Anyway, go to this dungeon and go and get all these bloodstones so that you can get your revenge later. And you're like, okay, I'll go do it. But the thing is that if you get killed in the dungeon, which is likely because the difficulty scales pretty, you know, high eventually, then your spirit gets put into a new skeleton whom you get to choose. And each different skeleton, you know, you get to choose from three, and they roll with like a random perk that you can have, like, you know, extra fire damage to attacks, you know, better with weapons, can poison. And they have, you know, like these randomized names and stuff that's pretty great. So it's kind of cool. So it's like a succession of skeletons, but you're only ever playing the one. And the cool thing about it is that when you die, you get to keep almost everything. Most importantly is money. Also all the equipment. And the other cool thing about it is that when you find new swords, equipments, and stuff like that in the dungeons, even if you don't pick them up, because you can only carry one at a time, so like I said, this is very simplistic. It's not like Diablo where you're carrying a whole arsenal throughout the entire game, you know, slowly trading each piece out for another increment of one, you know, version of that piece. Anyways, so, you know, like you'll have a sword and it's like, here's a hammer. You want this hammer? And you're like, yeah. It's like, well, you can't have the sword then. And it like flings it out of your inventory. Ha! But they all end up back at the hub. So you actually slowly get to build up like this build out that you can customize like down to like the letter, and also, perks, which do different effects, lightning strike attacks and like, you know, hit inspiration when you throw your skull. There's actually, you can throw your skull at enemies and also use it to solve puzzles and things like that. And it's, you have to walk over it to pick it back up, but some, you know, you can also slowly like kind of magnetize it back to yourself, if that makes any sense. And that's kind of a mechanic there. So there's like, if you equip helmets, they actually have attack ratings because they don't affect your defense. They affect how much damage your skull does when you hit somebody with it, which is pretty great. And yeah, so like you walk around, you build up this this whole like cache of like different things and keep going into the dungeon. And it will also, of course, randomize the dungeons, including the kinds of dungeons that are available. So you might actually start a game and there's no like actually easy level dungeons available to you. So you're like, oh, I'm going to die then pretty soon.
But it's like fun replaying.
Yeah, it's really fun to replay. Like, it really doesn't feel like you lose anything. You just have to redo the dungeon again. And I think part of that is also helped by the fact that there's no levels in the game. Your stats are tied to your equipment and your perks. They're not actually tied to an overarching level. So losing a character doesn't mean anything. You're just losing a skeleton and then, you know, starting with another skeleton. So it's kind of cool to, like, go through that. And because they really nailed the kind of, like, you know, not too fast, but fast enough, not too challenging, but challenging enough, you know, like they kind of nailed that, like that nice balance of like difficulty in this kind of dungeon crawler. So, you know, you're not going to be like making 5 seconds of progress and then starting all over and, you know, having to wait through load screens and stuff. You'll actually probably get to the end of you know, because each dungeon is like about 4 floors. I'm sure there's later exceptions to that. And then, you know, there's bosses and stuff, too. But it's like you can really get close to the end, like, you know, with a basic loadout. So and here's the other cool thing.
Get good loot and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, if you got the loot before, just load out with that loot, you know. the other thing that's really cool, I didn't get to try it, of course, but this game does have up to 4-player co-op. And in fact, 3 of the 64 available perks are for co-op only, so they must have something to do with like the teams and stuff. So
local co-op, though, I believe, right?
I think it is local co-op. Yeah. I didn't see any.
I don't think there's online in this one. I played a little bit of it.
And honestly, that's fine. It's not like a compelling enough game that I would like want all my friends to play like online this one. But then again, in these trying times, you know, internet co-op's kind of the only way to do it now.
True. Well, as it stands, the game is sitting at $16.99. What do you think?
I think that is just right. I think that this is a solid buy it for the dungeon crawler enjoyers. It's of course not as hardcore and like, you know, you'll dump 3,000 hours of your life into it like Diablo, but it gets close enough to that experience that the casual and like the younger set will really enjoy picking this one up. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a buy it.
Cool beans.
Yeah. Seems cool from the little bit I played. I didn't get too far yet, but it's also cool to hear that it's a solid game from 10. Like 10 Tons is known for their twin stick shooters, right? This is not a twin stick, but like.
No joke. Yeah. A 10 Tons game is my 4th most played game on the Switch.
Yeah,
King Oddball. So awesome.
I was gonna say King Oddball.
King Oddball, not a twin stick shooter, but also pretty cool.
Yeah, nice to hear. I reviewed that on the Switch, and then I just never stopped playing it. I 100%ed it 4 times.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Jeez!
Awesome.
That's stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Yeah, 10 Tons has a lot of cool stuff.
They really do.
Raider Biz says that's dedication. Yeah, just a little.
It's more like it's like my Bejeweled, you know.
It's his Gems of War. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I won't get you guys.
This is not your Candy Crush.
Yeah.
Oh man. Anyway,
it's like Joe's Rock Band.
I don't know. You can't spend that much money on.
King Oddball has no DLC. Kiss. Thank God. No.
King Oddball does not have 3,000 songs you can download.
Yeah.
Yet King Oddball is going to bring on the DLC any day now. Next,
we need you to get your garage guitar set.
I'm on it.
All right, next game to talk about is Shinrai Broken Beyond Despair, developed by Gosatsu Visual Novels, published by Rattlake Games, released October 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. A group of 10 friends gathers at a secluded mountain resort to spend the night of All Hallows Eve together. However, what was originally intended to be a fun little Halloween party quickly turns into an actual night of horrors. When one of the attendees is found dead, fear and uncertainty spread among the group as the friends realize they are trapped with a murderer. Brooke, who is the murderer?
Oof, it's probably you, Joe.
Oh, son of a bitch.
I know.
Someone with a drink of Cracker Jack.
No, it killed some people, so what's going on?
It was the pantry with the Cracker Jack.
Oh, yeah,
wow, with the Cracker Jack soda. Major spoilers for any of our listeners tonight. Okay, so Wise Man once said, we've had a lot of great games tonight. Wouldn't it be great if a bad one showed up and just messed up the whole vibe. Gosh, this game... Well, you know, I have my review pre-written out, but this game was a confusing experience for me. Did I like this game? Like is a strong word. I'm just not sure. There are parts of this game that I really liked a lot. I really enjoyed coming in hot last week, making my debut on the show, just being super enthusiastic about a $50 visual novel that I openly admit is just like a really, really silly time. And I'm sure some people listening to that were like, does she just like all silly anime games? And you know, I thought I did, man. But anyway, this game opens up strong. You know, we're looking at an anime cat girl. She's wearing glasses. She's frowning. At this point, I'm all in. Then our inner dialogue begins, and it's all, wow, look at the cat girl. She's really ugly. She's so plain, like blah, 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 just like really laying in with the negging. And at this point, I'm like, wow, what kind of game did Joe give me? Where are we going to go from here? Really mean. By the time the inner monologue is done, we hate ourselves. We hate this narrator for being such an asshole to this poor cat girl, only to find out, surprise, we are the cat girl. That's our voice that we're hearing while we look into the mirror because we are an angsty, sulky teenager who hates ourselves. It's kind of a neat surprise. It's actually pretty well done. And there's a lot of writing like that in the game. Surprising, disturbing details, point of view tricks, creepy, unexpected takes that create a unique mood that's really great for a murder mystery game. In my opinion, the actual murder mystery part of the game just feels incomplete. It feels kind of disjointed, just doesn't seem to work right. Rather than built out from a central whodunit idea, this game feels built around maybe a few really interesting teen social drama ideas. But that's about it. All the murder stuff feels a little bit like a stretch to me, almost like it's forced in order to give the game a greater purpose. So yeah, when it comes to the writing, I feel like there's a ton of potential from an actual unique voice, so it's a little frustrating. That's actually the same way I feel about the soundtrack in this game. The person making the music for this game feels like they're probably actually really cool and talented, and maybe just haven't been at it that long, or like need some more time to develop or something. A couple of the tracks were absolute bangers, no lie. But mostly I was just left wondering, like the rest of the game, what's even going on right now? Why is this happening to me? Graphics are, you know, they're low budget, nothing wrong with that. They're good for what they are, mechanics-wise and controls. You know, it works. It's definitely an interactive mystery solver that's trying very hard to be 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, or Danganronpa or something. It's got point-and-click screens throughout to make you feel like you're really searching a room for clues or interrogating a lineup of your closest friends from high school, one of whom may have murdered a young girl in cold blood. You know, we've all been there.
Yeah, it's just there was that Saturday was rough.
This guy knows what I'm talking about.
You did last summer.
I ate a lot of water ice.
All in all, I did enjoy a fair amount of the game. There are some very delightfully anime characters in this game. My favorite character was actually one of the character's dads, who exists totally off screen. We never meet him. We only find out he exists because we ask the class prankster, Mika, you know, why are you always pranking? Why you gotta be scaring people all the time? Why do you seem to be obsessed with scaring everyone into school until they either wet their pants or run off crying? those are really her two benchmarks too. She won't stop until you wet your pants or you run off crying. So we ask her,
did
what's
you say
that all about?
Benchmarks or bitch marks?
Bitch marks, but you know what? I want to bring back bitch marks. Let's turn to that one later.
Joke's on her. I didn't drink anything today.
Shit. But yeah, so we're like, why are you always pranking? She's like, oh, I'm glad you asked. See, when my dad was in school, he scared 108 of his classmates one by one until they all peed themselves. And he said, if I can beat his record and hit 109, he will buy me some ice cream.
I was just like, he will pee his pants.
That'd be pretty cool too. So this ends up raising more questions than it answers. The most notable being, you know, besides have you ever had ice cream? Well, how does he know if you're really scaring people? How does he know? And she goes, hey, super glad you asked. You see this cool skull pendant that I always wear on my shirt every day? That's actually a camera. He's always watching me. He's watching all of us so he can verify my pranks. Anyway, that guy rules. If you like that sort of thing, whatever that is, lots more like it in the game. Kind of a fun time. And yeah, that's my review.
Damn. So $15 on Shinrai. What are you thinking?
I hate to say it, but I think for most people, this is going to be a deny it at that price. I wish this game was like $7 instead of $15, like $3 to $5 when it's on sale. And some of my favorite visual novels have clocked in at about like $2.99, and I've still enjoyed. So there's nothing wrong with that. I think $15, especially after last week saying that one Otome game is worth $50 or more, it hurts me to say that I don't think this is worth that price. If someone gave me this game and was like, hey, this is a school project a couple kids I know did, they really want to get into visual novel design, check it out, I'd be like, awesome, this is an amazing first try. I want to see what they come up with in a couple years.
Well, given what Radleika does, it is possible that this is someone's first or, you know, very early game. Radleika is good at bringing developers' first titles or early titles to console players for, you know, for the world to judge. And that's what we do.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think there's anything wrong with that. If somebody was like, hey, one person made this game by themselves, the art, the writing, the music, all by that, I'd be like, oh, that makes sense. At this price point, though, I don't know. All in all, this game's definitely not worthless. But that's why I say I wish it were just a few bucks. This game could be a fun experience if you know what you're getting into beforehand. You know, get some Halloween candy, play it with a friend over the weekend if you both would appreciate a really fan-servicey anime mystery game that's going to make you yell, what are y'all doing? What's happening at the screen, like, more than a few times. It's a goofy Halloween party for high schoolers. It goes a little wrong, and, you know, sometimes the game feels like that itself. But it has its moments.
And so, it's probably easy for achievements and trophies, right? Since it's a Radleika published game.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm looking like a king on PlayStation 4 Network. All my friends are really cool right now.
Oh, we will get you so many platinums. If you want trophies, we will get you trophies on this show.
Visual novels are, gold. And
yeah, look it up. It looks like Gosatsu Visual Novels is a team of two. So it's only two members in this game originally released. It was their first project back in 2016. So
makes sense.
There you go.
There you go. That's pretty cool. In that vein, I'm impressed. I enjoyed this game, but not everybody approaches these games like me.
Yeah.
So as long as you know what you're getting yourself into, throw a goofy Halloween party. It's no coincidence it came out on the 28th of last month.
True. Very true.
And on a positive, I mean, games go on sale. So
yeah.
Yeah, Radleika puts a lot of their stuff on sale after a while, so definitely check out for it. Take a look. Keep an eye out for it.
Cool beans. All right, next game is The Immortal, developed by Pico Interactive, published by Cubite Interactive. It released October 28th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $7.99. Labyrinth holds mysteries unfit for mortal eyes, mysteries of eternal life, of sudden death, of sorcery and betrayal. The Immortal is an isometric action-adventure game with combat scenes and multiple choices when it comes to story. Purnell, tell us about The Immortal.
Hey, Brooke, you're not alone. There's another.
You mean this game is not immortal?
Oh, it's immortal. We'll wish it wasn't. Oh, God. So fun fact about this game. I was out to dinner with some friends, and it came up that this game was coming out, and they loved The Immortal. I had never played it back then. Never played it.
Your friends lied to you, Purnell.
Well, they clearly did, because I'm like, they were like, it was a really cool game back, and then I'm like, I never played it. And then, like, I got home, changed my clothes, and Joe's like, you want to review The Immortal? I'm like, what a coincidence. It was a game that we just talked about. So I wanted to see what all the fuss was about. And quite frankly, I am freaking flabbergasted, but I'll talk about why. I'm not going to just give it the shit pan special. I'm going to discuss my issues with it. So The Immortal starts out with you being, actually, let me rephrase to start off by saying, this game includes two versions of The Immortal. The one that released on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and also the one that released on the Sega Genesis. And initially, I thought that it was just like, hey, this is a remake that looks nicer, but they actually are kind of pretty different games. Like, they have the general basic structure, but the puzzles and traps and stuff are kind of laid out differently, so you won't get the same game. You'll pretty much be playing two different games. But anyway, now that's out of the way, I mainly stuck with the Genesis one because that was the one I felt most comfortable with, and that's saying it loosely, as far as my experience with the game went. So in both games, though, you start out in a room. You walk up to a table, and smoke pours out of a candelabra on the table that says, "Hey, guy, come save me." And you're like, "But I'm not that guy. I guess I'll go save him anyway." So you will proceed to walk around. It's an isometric dungeon exploration game. And fun thing about this game that kind of lets you know what you're in for is as you're walking, depending on what tile you walk in on the first room, there's a message that pops up that says, "I would move if I were you. And if you don't, a sandworm comes up and eats your face." Now, after that happens, you know, because it's going to happen most likely, you'll likely get a message that says continuing. So you'll respawn and you'll go again. You'll go from room to room. And in each room, you'll come across a variety of traps, hazards, enemies, and objects. Objects being like items. Interesting thing about this game, like at the surface, as I go into this, this sounds like a game that I would like. But there will be a few things. So, for example, you might come across a dead body. You walk up to the dead body. You don't have to click anything. The game just indicates that you interacted with it by walking up to it. It'll say, "Do you want to search the body?" You go, "Sure." And you'll get all the different items that are, you know, housed on it, like a ring or some money or what have you. And that's normal stuff. Also, you might come across an NPC. NPCs might give you items, give you some quest details or what have you. And then the thing that most annoyed me, but there's other issues, but the thing that most annoyed me is you'll come across the occasional enemy that you have to engage in combat. The combat in this game is butt sausage awful. I don't know who in their right mind could sit down and be like, "You know, this is a lot of fun." Like, and to put in perspective here, I was like, okay, I don't have a manual. And I don't know the perspective. Maybe if I go look up some old FAQs or people talking about the game, I'll get a better understanding of how combat works. No, I've actually seen people flat out say, "Just mash left and right and don't even attempt to parry because you're not going to make it work. It doesn't work." Like, people who like the game said, "Just spam it."
Just get lucky, RNG something. I don't know.
Literally, like, it's just the combat is garbage. Like, I hated the combat. And the funny thing about it is that the game itself is extremely unfair in the puzzles and stuff. But anybody who knows me knows that I would tolerate that. I'm perfectly fine with, like, mashing through puzzles, including things that kill you outright. Like, to give you an example, you'll come across a bag of spores. Okay, the game's like, okay, I got some spores. I guess I can plant these somewhere. And if you try to plant them on like a tile, it'll say, "Can't plant this here. Can't plant it on stone." Like, okay. So you finally find a tile that is like made of like, you know, dirt. Plant the spores, mushrooms grow, and you die. That's great. And there is a weird respawn mechanic that exists in the game, though I have no idea what determines when you'll respawn and when you'll actually have a game over. I really don't. Like, I found a pile of hay. You can sleep on the pile of hay, and when you wake up, these notches at the top of the screen will go up, which indicates, I thought at least, that's like a sort of life bar. So if you die, that's how you know if you can respawn or not. No, inconsistent. Sometimes I'll die. It's like, nope, game over. Like, what the fuck determines when I wake up or not?
They don't explain any of this stuff, huh?
They don't explain shit. They explain nothing. And don't get me wrong, classic games have a knack for that. I get it. And sometimes they even have a manual for it that says, "Hey, here's how this actually works." But this game, I can't feel it. And you know what really validated my point on this? AVGN did a fucking thing on it. I was really shocked about it. And I'll admit, he got a few things off on his. Like, he was like, "It never explained what there's pitfalls." Like, there is an item that does tell you there's pitfalls in this room and they're located in these spots. But admittedly, if you don't find the item, you don't know about the pitfalls and you're going to die. Same for the shadow monster that will just bop you out of nowhere if you don't know they're there. There's an item that says if you do this thing, you can see the shadows, which means when you walk into the room that's dark, you're like, that infers I gotta throw fireballs to light the candelabras that indicates that shadows are running around the floor. And it works. So there are intuitive things that exist, but much of this game is designed to fucking kill you. There's another item that you find where, I mean, it say nothing about it. It's just like, here's an amulet. Okay, I found it. And when you select it, the game goes, "Do you want to hold the amulet up?" I'm like, sure. And then it says, "Do you want to read it?" If you read it, you die.
You fucking die. I was like cursed amulet or something. I knew it.
So I was amazed I even figured out where to use it because it was like a thing that looked like it could be some kind of beam or something. And I was like, I think this could be the place. And I'm like, no, not wrong spot. Walked over to use it again. Wow. And I found the next floor. And Then you go to another floor and do it all the fuck over again. More cryptic shit. Buy a potion from a guy that's supposed to protect you from slimes, but it just melts your goddamn shoes, and then you die anyway. It's freaking weird. You can at least save your game, though, and then boot it back up. So you can kind of save some of your game. Then you can die again, but not repeat the whole game because of saves coming. But at the same time, the battles still make me go, I don't want to deal with this. If the battles weren't there, I will not lie to you, I would brute force this shit because that's just how I work. I like solving puzzles. The battles ruin my desire to even want to do that. It just, the game is not good. Like, it's, I get that people like old stuff sometimes. I play some shitty games that I loved back in the day. I love Amagon. I love freaking Ephemeral Asia. I like a bunch of games that people hate. I admit that. And Immortal is going to be that game for a lot of other people.
Nostalgic for some people, right? Yeah. There's some Immortal fan out there, and not the Evanescence song.
And I wouldn't even be surprised if someone's listening to me rant about it right now. They're like, oh, sweet, sweet death. I love you, Immortal. I'm like, no, I love death too, but not this death. I don't like death by stupid ogres who have me combating them in a way that makes no fucking sense. Like, it's just dumb. It's dumb.
The game's sitting at $7.99. What are your thoughts?
If you have nostalgia for this game, then you already know you want this thing. But if you're like me, who had no idea what it was, and you're wondering what all the fuss is about, I implore you, nay, stay away. Keep your money in my pocket.
Can I add a little bit?
Sure.
Of course.
If you do have nostalgia for this game, then it's already, the NES version is already on the Switch Online.
Oh, there it is.
You can already play the NES version, but I recommend you don't. I own the actual cartridge. It's
not good.
This game will make the smartest dungeon crawler fan feel like a stupid fool.
Mm-hmm. I can't recall the last time I played the game where most of the things in the game you get are like, nope, that kills you. Nah, you get it, but you should lose it.
It is a troll of a game, absolutely. And it, I feel for you having to learn that the hard way.
Which is because trolls also kill you.
That said, though, it's interesting. This is the first in the series of the Cubite classics. I saw they announced a couple at their event. They did a Cubite show or whatever, a showcase, and they have a bunch of other games coming. So it's interesting to see what other ones. Yeah, they have
The Humans coming, Canon Legends of the New Gods, Brave Battle Saga, The Legend of the Magic Warrior. And then on the Switch, they have the game Head Over Heels, but I don't know if that's a classic or...
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
No, don't get me wrong. I hope they're not listening to...
Is that a classic game, Head Over Heels?
It is considered a classic, yeah.
It's an Alanis Morissette song.
By 1987 British computer standards.
Gotcha.
it's no nuts and milk, but it'll do. But what I will say is that if they are listening to this and they're like, this guy hated this game, I implore you, I'll try the other ones.
Right.
They're bad too. I just have to be honest. And
to each their own,
yeah.
The Immortal left me yearning for death.
Put that on the box quote. Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Galaxy Shooter, developed by InLogic Games, published by Fantastico Studio, released November 2nd on the Switch for $4.99. Take your starship to fight, cruise the galaxy, and shoot down formations of evil space invaders, dodge the bullet hell, and shoot them up. Chris, tell us about Galaxy Shooter.
Well, with a crystal clear explanation like that, what else do I have to add? Anyway.
Dodge the bullet hell and shoot
also,
them up.
Also, I take some issue with them evoking the image of a bullet hell, but it is not a bullet hell. There's no sheets of bullets. It's more like Galaga, where it's like you're kind of dodging like enemy patterns, but then sometimes like these spreads of bullets will come out in like really simple patterns and stuff. Anyway.
Well, it's more of a bullet head.
Yeah. So this is a vertically scrolling shoot 'em up or shmup or STG if you're fancy. But this is an interesting take on it because instead of being an auto scrolling shooter, It's an auto-shooting scroller.
What?
Not only are you, you know, moving your ship around, dodging bullets and whatnot, you actually don't have control over your bullets. It is actually going on autopilot.
Hmm.
You are constantly shooting a stream of bullets going up. So when you first start the game, it kind of gives you a fake out. You're like this hero, and you're supposed to, you know, defeat the alien swarm and, you know, whatever, take down the bad guy, whatnot. And so, you know, you get out there and you're just like blasting everything. And you're like, yeah, okay, this is awesome. I got so many like bullets and rockets and all this other stuff. And for some reason, they're all shooting by themselves and I have no control over this. I can only move my ship around and dodge bullets. Well, if you get hit enough to actually get killed, which you will, then the game starts over with a replacement pilot. And they're like, OK, now you go out there and destroy all the aliens and try not to get killed like that last guy. And so now you start off with a ship with just a pea shooter. And of course, you will die because it's that pea shooter is not going to do anything for you. But every time you destroy an enemy, you get like a certain amount of like money, which you have to go fetch. And I'll get to that in a second. And when you get killed, then you start over again, but you keep all of that money. The money is used to purchase upgrades. The upgrades are used to get in there again and get a little further and get more money, which is then used to get more upgrades. And upgrades are not only to the guns, where you can like level up the gun that you have and then purchase like another gun that will shoot at the same time that's like, you know, faster, maybe more spread or something like that. But the expense of them builds up so much that you really don't have much of a choice but to just buy the next thing that you can buy, you know?
No.
Because like the next thing above that is like triple expensive. And you can also buy armor for your ship, and you can also purchase a magnet to get the even level up your magnet to get the money to come to you instead of having to go and fetch it. Like everything is upgradable on this ship. And once you've exhausted all the upgrades, then you can start buying things like decals and art and like other weird things like that. And all of it just goes into like starting this game over and trying to get as far as you can without getting hit more than like, I don't know, about three times to start. And then, you know, as your armor gets upgraded, you get more hits. And the way that it's such a mobile game approach to it that even as you get hit, it causes cracks in the playing field as if you're breaking your phone. So like that.
Yeah, I was about to say, from what I saw of the game, like it looked like a mobile game. I don't know. Do you know if it's a port from mobile?
I did not research that.
Yeah, I don't know either, but it definitely gave me that vibe.
Yeah, it gave me that vibe too, and there's another reason for that is that all of the buttons on the game look like they're touchscreen buttons, but the touchscreen doesn't actually work on this game. Instead, they just give you a cursor that you control with the stick, so you don't even like choose menu options by like just scrolling through them. Like you actually have to point at them with a cursor, which to me is like, okay, that's a mobile port, I think, because these used to be touch buttons.
Mm-hmm. There is a game on mobile called Galaxy Shooter. I don't know if it's the same one though.
Okay, well,
there's a different looking logo, so I'm not positive.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it's called Galaxy Shooter. That's like calling a game Dungeon Encounters.
Yeah. Or Dragon Quest.
Anyways, the one interesting thing that I noticed about this game, and this is and you know, I'm gonna get this tagged, but it's a unique thing, is that like shooters, the game has Tate mode or whatever, tape mode, where you can make it go the long ways on the screen so you can play it like full screen on the Switch by holding it sideways. This is the only game I've ever played that's like that, where you can still operate it without detaching the controllers or using a flip grip because you're only using one stick. So you can just kind of hold it up on its end and still control it with that little stick that's on the left side.
That works.
So, that's interesting.
It kind of reminds me of that. I don't know if you played it. I forget. But I played Switch and Shoot. I think you guys reviewed that one. I don't know if you reviewed
it. I didn't play it, but I remember hearing about it. Yeah.
It's like one analog, one movement. And interesting.
Yeah. So it's, Galaxy Shooter is an interesting little one. And it really what it gets by on. I mean, the music's okay, the graphics are okay, everything about the game is okay. There's not a big complaint to make in a game like this, unless, you know, you want like a lot of content or something. But anyways, not at this price. But like The thing that really gets it going is that it just very transparently has the addictive quality of collect the things, use the things to buy better things, and then use the better things to buy, you know, to collect more things. It's mm-hmm. it's just got that basic addiction formula like a gosh darn Pepsi. And so whether you like it or not, you'll probably end up going back to it. I definitely have been playing it this whole episode.
Nice.
I'm excited to try that one. Glad you're liking it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's $5. What do you say?
This one is actually firmly in the camp of fuck it, why not? Because it is very much like, again, there's no major complaints. There's no major high points of it, but you will definitely get like continue playing this, you know, as long as you can make it to that first upgrade, which is just cheap enough that like you'll probably get it within a few minutes and then you'll be hooked. So
nice.
It's a nice hooky little shooter, and I do appreciate it. So yeah, it's a fuck it, why not?
Cool beans.
Hell yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one
by the skin of our teeth.
You mean we're not going to continue? Me and Purnell and Joe are not going to continue talking about Riders Republic for another hour?
No,
I mean we could, but I'm asking. We almost sex, been, I got no. another. Now I got another. I got another petrified asshole in my party, so that just fucked my day.
You said dungeon encounters cured you.
I wish it did, because God, this when you get a guy gets stoned, you're like, fuck, God damn it.
I know.
Petrified asshole is a good name for the episode.
I know healthcare in this country. Healthcare in this country sucks, but you gotta see somebody about that petrified asshole.
Oh my god.
Perfection!